Possession crucial from this. How much longer will the referee allow? Dublin lead by a point. And there's the whistle. It's over. It's over.
We earned it by winning the last two matches on the road, and that's not going to be taken away from us.
But what I love in hurling, I love players that will never give in.
He hits it. He hits it. It's over the bar.
Hello and welcome to the RTE GAA podcast. It's a week and a half before Christmas, so obviously we're here to preview the All-Ireland football final. Been a strange old year, but we've got familiar pairings in the All-Ireland football final. We have Dublin and we have Mayo, so it makes sense that we have Kevin McStay and Kieran Whelan here with us, along with Rory O'Neill. How is everybody getting on today?
Good, Mike.
All good.
Very
all good.
Good, Mike, yeah.
Fantastic. Kevin, I'll start with you. As we mentioned off air, there was a lot of love for your column this week in the Irish Times, where you explain your affinity for football and, in a way, your county's affinity for football. And we were complimenting you because you managed to do it without being maudlin or saccharine. You just explain what basically football is, and hurling, and most sports in any county and in any place. It's tradition. It's handed down. You have no choice in the matter. But you also made the very fair point that, you know, Mayo may not have a great record in finals in the last, you know, half a century or more, but you're still a fairly successful county. And again, against the odds, here we are. You could say against the odds, with a fairly difficult run to the final, or at least run to a Connacht title, you're back in the final against your old foes.
Thanks, Mikey. That was thanks for saying that. Yeah, I enjoyed doing the column, and it was kind of motivated principally from, you know, the sense out there that a lot of counties think that it's just shocking. It must be dreadful to be a Mayo supporter or a Mayo fan. And I wanted to, you know, just put it out there that we've had some of the greatest, I was just telling you a few of them there off air, weekends in the build-up. The final result has never gone our way. But it's better to journey, isn't it? It's better to have loved and lost than not to have loved at all.
Exactly. I know the feeling, Kev.
Well, yeah, there you go.
This is it. You know, we're talking about tradition here, Kieran. We're talking about, you know, a love of a football team being handed down, etc. Dublin could be split into a million smithereens after this final, and there'll be a generation who will grow up adoring Dublin football, because some of them, because they lived through the hard days with you and your team, and then they came into this wonderland, and then more who've known nothing but success. It can't be forgotten that, you know, while the rest of us wring our hands over what to do with Dublin, this is kind of fairyland stuff, which you could have never have dreamt of, unfortunately.
No, never envisaged, Mike. And I suppose, like, the narrative around Dublin changed obviously so much over the last 10 years. And, you know, I've gone on record before talking about, I would have huge empathy with the Mayo lads coming to the Well so many times and going home, and I know what it's like to wake up on that Monday and Tuesday and Wednesday and Thursday, you know, and not want to get out of bed and not want to leave the house, and you're distraught and despaired, but you gotta admire them. They keep coming back to the Well, and every, you know, many times they've been written off over the years, and people say, is this the end of this team? And you know, they keep coming for more. And in some ways, you look at, you know, I know Kevin played back, obviously, you know, years and years and years ago. But I remember going to an All-Ireland semi-final as a nine-year-old in 85, and Kevin would have been playing, you know, in corner forward. And, you know, Mayo had great opportunities then in 89 and stuff like that. But the Mayo team of the last 10 years, you know, people will look back in time and say, wasn't it a great time? Even if they don't succeed, they will look back in time and say, wasn't it a great period? Didn't we have great crack? Didn't we have great, everyone that's involved with that panel? Because that's what happened. That's similar to our own vintage, that, yeah, we had the highs, we had the lows, everybody hugged each other, put their arms around each other, but you'd still do it all again. And so you gotta, I've massive admiration for the Mayo team, and particularly the core group of lads. I know they have a lot of younger players coming through this year, and there's seven or eight changes, but there is a core of them that have been there for the last decade, and they've been through heartache, you got to admire their character that they keep coming back from, and probably a little bit unfortunate that they're up against, you know, one of the best
players team ever.
Time. And had their chances to beat them, you know, their chances. You know, you look back to 16, 17 in particular, and I'm sure those games will weigh on their minds for a long time, as do some of the defeats that we went through. You never forget them. You never want to look back on them, but you never bloody forget them.
Yeah. Rory, I was asking one of the lads, you know, Declan Welly, to kind of have a revisit a piece he wrote in 2017 where he went down to Mayo kind of just to look at the hype and, you know, the kind of the phenomenon around the fans. And I said to him, maybe you could chat to some of those people again and just kind of, you know, see what it's like this year without the hype. And he just came back and said, it won't work. It's just not going to work, this piece. I can't make it work. These people, they won't be as engaged if you call them on the phone, or like, there's nothing to photograph. There's nothing. And I said, you're right. Like, the build up here is very odd, and the players might say, oh, it suits us. You know, I can go to work. I'm working from home. I'm not being harassed in the bank, not harassed, but, you know, I'm not being asked the same question 47 times. But for the fans, you know, and for most people, they experience all their own finals as fans, not as players. It is a bit of we're all glad to have it, but it's odd and it's a dampener, isn't it?
Oh, I couldn't agree more, Mikey. Obviously, I was there on Sunday last for the All-Ireland Hurling Final, and I'm just like, I mean, there's no point in me beating around the bush on this one. I hated it. I absolutely hated it. I thought it was bereft. It was like, it felt like somebody had stolen something from us. And it was a horrible, really horrible experience. Totally underwhelming, lacking in any sense of occasion, lacking in any sense of, it was just, look, somebody said to me, oh, it's better than not having the games at all. Yes, it is, but just about, only just about. It was like, now on the flip side of it, you were thinking to yourself, that may help the underdog. And that was something that I was kind of hoping that might happen from a Waterford perspective, because you always like to see the romance in these in sports stories come true. And you're saying to yourself, like, yeah, that could possibly help Mayo. But to be honest with you, most of the Mayo team, they've been through the mill of All-Ireland Finals. So I'm not entirely sure if it's going to be too much of an aid. Like, they will be all, a lot of them will be quite experienced anyway, dealing with All-Ireland Final days and all of the hype around it. So I don't know if it's actually going to be of a benefit, an advantage or a disadvantage one way or the other. I just think the whole thing is just desperately sad for the players, for their families, and for the supporters in general, for the two counties, because we know, everybody loves socking it to the Dubs at the minute, but the one thing you have to say about them is they have a rabid bunch of supporters, a huge fan base, who are very, very loyal, who will follow them through thick and thin, up and down the country, to all sorts of league games, home and away, and they're not able to be there, and it's just very sad.
Kevin,
can I just a very small little add-on to that, Mikey, which is a very interesting one from a sports person's point of view, or the competitor in us all. It was very interesting. I hear exactly what Rory is saying, and it did all feel a little bit clinical and cold. But the interviews with the Limerick lads afterwards said that many of them said, we enjoyed this more than the first one, which points very obviously to this whole sports psychology thing of intrinsic motivation and the idea of doing it for yourself, which is has to be the primary motivation in this COVID year. The extrinsic motivators, you know, your the crowd, the occasion, you know, blah blah blah. They're not part of it now. So I just found that very, very interesting. I said it to a friend of mine, and he said, well, there you go. That's the intrinsic motivation that these top competitors have to draw on an occasion like that Sunday. And of course, an occasion that's going to arise on Saturday night.
Yeah. Kieran, you said that, Asher, like for Mayo or Kerry or whoever they're playing, they have it tougher in the run-up because, you know, people will be hounding them for tickets and, you know, they can't go about their daily business. Whereas the Dubs, like, you know, they live in a city where, huge multicultural city where lots of people don't care about GA and they can just, they're anonymous. I always found that one a bit odd because I imagine you're never bloody anonymous in Raheny, you know, like, or everybody in their own community.
Yeah. I don't know whether I concur with that. Yeah. We all know in the run-up to big games that the hassle for tickets is a pain in the backside. We still all get it. Like, there's nothing worse. I hate that. And it's even still, you know, because people think, you know, because you're still involved in the game, that you can just produce tickets out of your arse pocket, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I think it's interesting, the psychology. I mean, interesting, the psychology of the whole final, I think, is a big thing. And 2 weeks ago, you're kind of seeing Mayo all year, and you see them come with their young players, and you guys on the block who have all performed really, really well. Oisín Mullin on the block and Tommy Conroy. You know, Ruan was there last year, Loftus moved. You know, they're a relatively new team and they performed consistently well. And I suppose not having the build-up and the pressure that goes with an All-Ireland final probably is usually positive from those lads' perspective, because I think a lot of the times you see, I go back to previous years, where the players that are performing well all year, and particularly young players, experience the first All-Ireland final and the build-up, it can kind of get to them, and it can kind of, they can freeze kind of on the day and they don't perform to their maximum level. And that's one way of looking at it in terms of a positive from Mayo. And as Rory said, they've been there plenty of other times. But on the flip side of that, I look at Dublin. And I wonder, is it nearly going to be more an advantage for Dublin? And if you go back to their All-Ireland finals that they've played in, traditionally in the first half, they've been edgy. They've been nervy, you know, 16-2 on goal, 17 Mayo, you know, really got a foothold on them. Tyrone got a foothold on them. Kerry, the first game last year. There was huge emphasis, I think, on the five in a row. Whether they spoke about it or didn't speak about it, that's the pressure that you can't get away from even within Dublin, even though it's a big place. And I think they were going for this unique record over the last couple of years. And I just think coming into the game now on Sunday, you're thinking, all that pressure is gone. All the pressure is off them. And they seem to be playing like a team that the pressure is off them. They seem very cool, relaxed. Now, again, they haven't played to the same level of opposition as they'll meet on Sunday, and you have to be respectful of that. But you just wonder, this narrative that it would suit Mayo and the build-up and the young players, it could bloody suit Dublin as well, you know, that they're in a comfortable environment and they're not going to feel that pressure. And, you know, Mayo have to get at Dublin early, and it can work both ways. I just think the psychology and the approach is very, very interesting. It's easy to lean towards the Mayo advantage, but, you know, that pressure is off Dublin that was there. And it was there, whether you like it or not, it was there over the last few years.
You get the impression, Rory, as well, like Kevin talks about intrinsic factors and motivations. Like, you read the interview with Keane O'Sullivan today, and like, he's got 20 minutes of game time this year. He's got a wife and a baby at home, and he's mad for Rhodes. He wants to get on in the final, and he wants to come back and play in 2021. We saw this before with Bernard Brogan. Like, you can be an anti-dub as you like. Not that we are here, but, you know, they get a lot of stick. But my God, these guys are like singularly motivated to a scary degree, where 5 or 6 All-Ireland medals, 7 All-Ireland medals in some cases.
He's going for 8. He's going for 8.
He's got 7 in the back pocket. Yeah. And he wants to come back next year, regardless whether he gets on or not, Rory. These guys, I don't think the crowd is a factor. If you look at the Cavan match, you look at any of the Leinster matches, they are, as Kieran says, these guys are motivated from within to a scary degree.
Yeah, and I would say, I mean, look, Willow, you were in there yourself, obviously not with the same levels of success, but like, the environment, I would imagine, is probably something that's attractive to them as well. I mean, like, I'd say it's a pretty intoxicating environment to be in, especially when it's a winning environment, and playing for Dublin. I mean, like, look, it's a massive thing in its own right. You know, it takes an awful lot, I say, for a lot of fellas to actually walk away. That's why fellas hang on for so long, because it's a huge honour, I suppose, and they take their football very seriously. So from Keane O'Sullivan's point of view, Bernard Brogan, I suppose there are one or two kind of outliers that maybe walk away a bit earlier than you would imagine. The likes of Dermot Connolly probably packed up sooner than maybe we were anticipating. Obviously, Jack McCaffrey is a bit of a lone wolf in terms of doing his own thing, and that's fine too. But by and large, most of the lads like Butsy, all those guys, they all, Paul Flynn, they want to hang on, they want to stay in there as long as they can. And I think that's testament, I suppose, to the culture that they've built up around the team. It's a very enjoyable environment to be in. They're very successful. It's a fantastic team to play for. They're cock of the walk at the minute, and sure, why wouldn't you want to stay on as long as you can, as long as the body can hold up?
Yeah, Kevin, that's kind of the thing, isn't it? That this, like, we want to make a big deal. This is the All Ireland football final, but whatever way you slice it, you do. The most optimistic Mayo fan I've spoken to this week even they're saying you have to have hope. That's kind of the strongest argument I've got so far. It is very, very difficult. We can talk about matchups and stuff now in a minute, but the nub of it is it's very difficult to make a case for Mayo here, isn't it?
Yeah, kind of starts and stops at hope. A friend said to me yesterday, yeah, and of course that's perfectly rational what you've just said, but you see, this is part of the thing, the point I was making in the piece, that rational thought thankfully doesn't particularly enter the squad in the build up to a big match, and again I'm sure Kieran would agree with me, he couldn't tell you one match he ever prepared for in his life. Probably even with Raheny, but certainly with Dublin, where he felt there was no hope. It just doesn't. And I played with Mayo all my life, and obviously we weren't as accomplished as Dublin in that period. But I honestly can say, fellas, I never recall a single game in my career where I thought we had no hope. That's been God's honest truth. Now, Where are their gains for Mayo? Well, I would say, in the first instance, this is the toughest opposition by a long stretch, by a massive stretch, that Dublin are going to face in the 2020 Championship, by multifactorial, I'd say. Mayo have certainly an improved forward line on previous years. That is definitely a positive, a scoring reasonably heavily forward line. The great pity is Jason Doherty isn't available to us. I mentioned that to you last night, Rory, in a text. Yeah. And also, you know, if we were to throw in Brendan Harrison in the defence, it would give us another all-star caliber defender for the matchups that I'm sure Mikey will touch
on. What's wrong with Brendan, Kevin? He got
injured in his first club match back after the lockdown and hasn't kicked a ball since, essentially. And Jason Doherty has now got a bad cruciate. I think it was against Donegal, if I remember, in the Super 8 last year. And he's not back to where he wants. He might have got another knock now since, but he certainly hasn't reappeared since that rotten injury. So, you know, they're two players that you'd love to have in the mix for Saturday. They're the positives that I can bring to it. The increased scoring power, the idea that Killian O'Connor is certainly in the best form of his life and is going to take some marking. Aidan O'Shea is building towards a big performance but hasn't quite got there yet. And beside him then is Conroy, who's been marvellous in this championship. And then you start running out of things. Like the biggest issue in this final, and there's lots of issues, is the matchup issue that we won't have enough. I think there's five. I keep referring to five that we have to tie down. I don't think we'll have enough to tie down five. And then the big issues then after that are the kick out, which I'm sure we'll mention, and the total lack of a bounce from our subs. I mentioned in the column that we've made 20 substitutions in the championship this year, four matches, five each day. So he runs the bench fully. And just in scoring terms, I know subs give a lot more to it than just the scores. There's other aspects to it. But just take that cold metric, 3 points from 20 substitutes, and those were against Tipperary and Leitrim deep into garbage time. They don't count. So no bounce, to my mind, no real bounce, compared to the sort of bounce that Dublin can look to when they bring in a McMenamin or a Mannion, that type of player. Costello, I think, comes in. His bounce is 7 points, I think, in one of the games he came on, you know, that type of thing. So that's a difficulty. Our midfield, like, you know, it'll probably be McCarthy, Fenton, I imagine. I don't know what Kieran thinks about that, but it probably will be. And then our pairing against them, like, we're only finding our feet with that midfield pairing, really. So, yeah, it's an incredibly difficult challenge on Saturday night, and they're just going to have to take it now, literally, I won't say minute by minute, but certainly the four quarters, you know, they just have to set their stall out and try and get to each of them in a compact, and I keep saying this about a lot of the underdogs in the matches I'm covering this year, you know, you just have to get to these water breaks or half times where you're competitive, you're in the game, and the game's still alive.
Yeah. Let's look at the kickouts then, because I was looking into this today, Kieran, and I'm sure you're all aware of the Twitter account, Don't Foul.
Spotted it last night.
Yeah. Really, really good stuff on there, and he wrote a blog last night. Was it on possessions or something? The possessions one was good. This is the one on kickouts where he actually went through it since going back over the last 6-7 years of semi-finals and finals and matches between Mayo and Dublin. Kieran, and he actually said that on their own kickout and the Dublin kickout, Mayo actually do statistically better than any of Dublin's other opponents. The problem is how well Dublin do on Mayo's kickout. And strangely, because of the chopping and changing, it seems that David Clark actually has had more success than Rob Henley has had on kickouts. But this is the kicker. Looking at this, no pun intended, this year, Clark's kickouts in Mayo's matches so far have statistically been very poor in comparison to what he did in previous years. They're not retaining enough possession. And like, without looking at that as a statistician, I can see that from watching Mayo games that they're not retaining a very high number of kickouts.
On the long kickouts.
Even on the short ones, he says they only retain 93% of their own short kickouts. You know, you should be retaining 100%,
I
suppose.
Just before you go to Wheeler, I know he's going to deal with that, but just put a small little bit of value on the point you're making. Bear in mind that David Clark's go-to kickout was the dink to the corner and the return pass, which is now outlawed.
Gone.
And that's and we all thought, oh gee, that was going to hurt Cluxton, but in fact it's actually hurting us. When I say us now, the Royal Mayo, it's hurting Mayo even more, to the point where I read where we obviously we have to go along now when there's a push up and there's too much pressure, that 9 out of 10 either first half or second half Tipperary kicks out to Tipperary were lost. You know that. I think that's a number that I recall.
Kevin, another interesting factor on that is that going back over those games, the amount of short kickouts that went sideways and were within the 21-meter line, 17 was incredible off Cluxton and David Clark.
That's right, gone there.
Now that's gone. You're out on the 21-yard line. You're going to have a press of 5 Dublin lads in his face. You know what I mean? And I think the stats are backed up probably because they're the two best teams at actually really pressing that short kick out and forcing the team to go long. But one of the interesting things that sticks out for me is, from a Mayo perspective, is I've seen a lot of Mayo. They do it very, very well, and they're very aggressive at it. And you can see O'Shea and Killian O'Connor, and when they do go short, their work rate is phenomenal in terms of the intensity they bring. They tend to, as the game progresses, they don't have the same energy levels. And even going back to that 17 final, I think 4 of Dublin's second half points came off short kickouts because Cluxton got everything away short in that second half, right? Because they invested so much energy into the game and physicality and intensity and trying to stay with Dublin that, you know, it allowed, because we know when Dublin have possession, you know, they'll do damage. So if you're giving Dublin possession, they're going to hurt you. End of story. But what was interesting about the, you know, if you look at the game and you look at the kickouts and you say, right, you know, from a Mayo perspective, you look ahead to Sunday and you say, right, let's say they crack Cluxton. Let's say they keep Fenton out of the game. Let's say they tie Kilkenny up, right? And you've no Jack McCaffrey and you've no Dermot Connolly, right? You'd probably say, you know, that will put Mayo in a very, very good position. But they'd done all that in 2017 in the first half. You know,
that's correct.
Came on. Cluxton was in trouble on his long kickouts. There were blitz in midfield. Lee Keegan had Kilkenny in his pocket. Jack McCaffrey was gone off injured. You know what I mean? And so Mayo have. That's why, as Kevin says, they are the best team that Dublin will come up against because they can match them physically. They're able to turn over Dublin, and they're probably the most comfortable in possession against Dublin. But the biggest question mark I have about them is, can they sustain that for 7 or 8 minutes?
Can any team sustain it?
And that's the big question mark. And I think, you know, what I'd be interested in your view, Kev, you know, you look at them the last day and they came out against Tipperary and they backed themselves to swarm Tipperary, push up high, flood midfield. They were brilliant in their second phase. I think they lost 8 of their 11 Tipperary kickouts, but then they turned them over in the second phase tackle. Sideline and stuff like that. They brought great intensity to that area, but they left themselves very exposed at the back, and there was huge spaces there. And it's a real, and Horan, what you love about Horan is that he's brave and he goes for it, and he'll play on the front foot. But you just wonder, can they afford to how are they going to set up on Saturday? You know, do they go for Dublin early doors, you know, with the risk of maybe conceding an early goal or leaving themselves vulnerable or something, or do they play an element of containment which mightn't suit either because you're inviting Dublin onto them, and are they trying to get into the second half? But it's I think, you know, even the learnings from last year, the second half, the third quarter, that being in that game coming down the stretch. And they were in 2017, in fairness, the Lee Keegan goal, that Donny Vaughan sending off didn't help, that sort of stuff. They managed to get there, I thought, in 17. But last year, Dublin just came out and blitzed them. So it's whether Mayo can, how they set up, and it's whether they can sustain that. And I think there has to be not an element of containment where you sit back and you invite Dublin, but they have to protect that full back line, because Dublin don't play with a full forward, essentially. They kind of come out and they play with great width, and then they try and get bodies in behind and that hand pass over the top, and they get a runner onto it, like Conor Collin and stuff like that. And they haven't been that ruthless in creating goal chances. So I think it's so important from Mayo perspective that they don't concede, you know, a goal early doors. Mayo, they have to rattle Dublin, but can they rattle them and stay with them for so long? I think is the biggest challenge.
That's the conundrum for everyone. They haven't, Rory, had to score a lot of goals, Dublin. But you would wonder, having watched the second half, James Horan will have been analysing that second half against Tipperary, and okay, it was, the game was gone and maybe people took their foot off the pedal. But do Dublin look at that and say, Christ, okay, we haven't really been too bothered with goals, but this is the All-Ireland final. This is a team that has bothered us the most in recent times. They seem to be vulnerable. They seem to have a soft underbelly. Do we go for goals now? Does Desi Farrell change the tactic and actually do that, go for green flags?
Well, that ties in exactly with what Wilo just said there, just before. Like, that's the big worry from a Mayo perspective, that Dublin will have identified maybe just a little bit of openness and a little bit of transparency in the heart of that Mayo defence, and look to pile bodies down there early to test it. And the question is then, from James Horan's point of view, and it's probably against his natural tendency in general, to be slightly more conservative, just to make sure that they give themselves a small bit more protection in that full back line so that they stay in the game early doors and don't get blown away too early and just have the heads drop. And effectively, because Dublin are very similar to Kilkenny in a lot of ways, like the old Kilkenny team, like they do have a tendency to try and, you know, go for spurts where they kill teams very, very quickly. And then it's a case of, right, let's just make the rest of the game easy for ourselves now. And it's kind of like, it's a spurt of scoring bursts that just, like, it just blows teams away.
12-12 last year, wasn't it?
Yeah, they do it to an awful lot of teams. But I think they can play it anyway, and I think that's the problem. But, like, that's the problem for anybody going up against them, is that no matter what way you kind of slice and dice it, they're almost an impregnable force. But at the same time, I do think, to go back to Mikey's question, they have to try and stay in the game as long as they can, not concede goals early, and maybe a little bit of extra protection, possibly a plus two instead of a plus one at the back. Does he throw in a wild card? I know you were impressed with that. What's the lad that was in the? He was in the.
Well, Páraic Ó'Hara.
The special forces.
Yeah.
Like, you know, and we were looking.
He's a warrior.
He's wild.
Did you say wild card? You're right there.
Wild card. But Kev, we were looking at the Mayo Tipperary game, right? And I think it was either Quinlevin or Stephen O'Brien, one of them, was coming through. He took a shot on goal.
Put the head.
And I think he used his head on purpose. Yeah. I think he used his head on purpose to block that shot.
Very brave, you know? Very brave player.
Like, so he's he's an interesting character. But look, you just hope from Mayo's perspective they can stay in the game. I personally think, and I hate to have to admit this because I kind of like Gaelic football. You want it to be played in the right spirit. I think Mayo are going to have to get dirty, get cynical, get late, take yellows, maybe even, you know, like pull and drag, slow it down. Get to the water breaks, take your time on kickouts.
The pitch might help them there, Rory.
The referee won't.
The less time the ball is in play, the better the chance that Mayo have of keeping the game competitive.
A couple of things I'll throw in there, Mikey, if you don't mind.
Go for it.
Number one, I hear what Rory's saying too, but Dave Coldrick is an outstanding referee. Outstanding.
Brilliant ref.
He's up there with David Goff, in my opinion. They'd be the market leaders. And so you won't get away with that coming late. You're only it's part of the game that Mayo aren't good at. Even if they wanted to be, they're not clever at it. They're quite blatant about some of the hits they hit. And here's the really strange thing now, and I'm as someone who's watched this Mayo team very carefully for the full decade, and you're talking about plus one and plus two, and I had that written right here in a little box as you were talking about it. I cannot tell you, and I don't think any of you three gentlemen either can, with any degree of certainty that Mayo will actually take cover defensively.
They're going back to man.
We don't know that. Like, I mean, I said to Keith Duggan when I was chatting to him during the week, one of the great joys on a very naive level is that I don't know whether, but I can also tell you one of the great frustrations would be if Mayo go out and don't take any sense of precaution defensively, whether that's plus one or plus two or an out and out sweeper or whatever. But the idea that they will go man to man, to me, is you're signing your death sentence, because
it's kamikaze.
One of the great things I've noticed about Dublin this year in particular, once they identified the one-on-one, and you'll hear them screaming it, you know, in the empty stadium, we can hear everything now upstairs in the commentary position. You can hear the coaching that's going on below. And they scream when there's a one-on-one to each other, because they're knocking fellas over in the first hit on a one-on-one. And they're going, but they're shaking fellas. The opposition are falling off the tackles. And if you get an overlap in your first, when you make the first contact and you break that tackle for the overlap, and Dublin then are obviously excellent at working the overlap, that's a highly dangerous strategy to match up one-on-one. And I can't believe for a second that we won't have defensive cover. And yet there's part of me saying, but you don't know for sure, Kevin, either.
Yeah, no, you really... And with James Horan as well, who is, as you mentioned, he's a very, very brave manager.
Yes,
and
yes.
He will back his players. But that brings us on to matchups, I guess. Wheelo, and I've kind of made my effort out of which I won't share here because I'm sure it starts with. But there's only one man to start with, and that's your clubmate, Brian Fenton. Which midfielder takes him? Do we give him a saddle and a stirrup?
You said it'd be a midfielder that'd take him.
Well, this is what I'm asking. Who do you think Wheelo is going to be tasked with the unenviable task?
I think it's a significant challenge. I'm not too sure whether Matthew Rowan or Loftus are the guys for him. I wouldn't be surprised if Mayo make a change in that space. You're saying Lee Keegan, Kev?
I'd throw it out there.
Yeah. You know, Lee Keegan would be a kind of a man marker, follow him around the place and get in his face and stuff like that. Fenton, what he's doing is he's a box to box player. He drifts off. He picks up the ball.
If you recall when we played them, Roscommon, at the time, Enda Smith was absolutely flying it for us. He was our number one go to man, and I think we had thought of every single permutation, Wheelo, coming into it. You know, we really had gone through what the match was, and geez, we looked out at midfield and who went in there to pick up Enda Smith for Lee Keegan.
Yeah.
I nearly fainted. I couldn't believe it.
Yeah.
And now maybe that was silly of me. I should have thought it. And then we spent the whole match then trying to get Smith to go back into full forward to try and get Keegan away from doing damage out the field. So I wouldn't rule it out.
You couldn't rule it out. And I think the midfield area, it's more important that Mayo have physicality, and if they're going to force a long kick-out game, that they're overloading, mm-hmm. they're committing, and they're winning primary possession in that area. Mm-hmm. And you saw, you know, particularly in 17, they managed to do that, but Parsons was very influenced around that. They had a lot of bigger, more experienced guys around the middle. Last year, Kerry, in the first game, you know, Jack Barry came in, he was the one for Fenton, but they flooded their midfield area and got a period of dominance on Fenton. So I think it's very, very difficult. Like, if it was a midfielder myself, there'd be nothing worse. There's nothing worse than a man marker and somebody kind of hanging out of you that's there, dedicated to do and stop you for the day, and their role is not touch the ball, and that could be effective. But you're giving up a player then. You're giving up a player, and that could hurt you another factor. So I actually think that, you know, it's very, very difficult for Mayo to pinpoint the Dublin of so many strengths that, like everything, they have to pick one or two key points, try and go after them. Tagging Fenton box to box, with a defender, I'm not so sure. But I do think we could see a change in that area because I'm not...
O'Shea?
You could have O'Shea out around that area. You could. I'm not too sure whether... Like, certainly Loftus and Rowan in that midfield battle. Great ball players. Rowan's a workhorse. Loftus is more a ground ball player, get forward. Do they have somebody that can match Fenton in that space? No. So I think there has to be a change. And that's why I think there could be a change in the Mayo team because I think their setup kind of has
to change. Are you saying bringing in someone, Kieran, is it?
I'd still put Keegan on Kilkenny. That would be my view because, you know, he's the one thing. I remember Kieran Kilkenny talking about afterwards that he was blown away by how physically strong Keegan was. And going into that, he felt that, you know, he'd be able to cope with him. And the role that Kilkenny is playing, that he's drifting inside, he's playing a lot inside in the forward line. He can also drift outside. Keegan would be the perfect man to follow him because he's comfortable in following him. And I think Kilkenny is probably, I still think he's Dublin's most influential forward in making the whole thing tick and happen. And he's also contributing heavily on the scoreboard. So I would think Keegan would be the one for Kilkenny in my view.
We're getting through them now. the five that Kev was talking about. Rory, Conor Callaghan, again, we're going to Don't Foul. The amazing stat from the last few finals that Conor Callaghan has been far and away the most assistant player. Yeah. He's created an insane number of scores for his teammates, including 7 kickable frees for Dean Rock. Last year, Mayo tried to it didn't work. So he's not unmarkable, but he's pretty close to it, isn't he?
Well, I think the first thing
about it suits him.
Yeah, well, with all Dublin players, I think the first thing you have to look at is the athleticism is first and foremost, and it's basically matching people up with them that you would hope will be able to stick with them just in terms of pace and running power. And Conor Callaghan is absolutely in that category. So, to my mind, I don't know, the lads would know more about this than me, certainly, but I'd probably look at someone like Paddy Durkin, maybe. Now, look, that takes a little bit then from what he gives you going at the other end, but I think certainly that to begin with, I think Paddy Durkin will certainly be able to stick with him, will have the physical capabilities to maybe get under his skin a small bit, because that's another problem. Because that's another thing, actually, that no one ever seems to like. It's very difficult to annoy them, to get them riled up. You never see rows with Dublin anymore. Like, you know, you'd love to see them involved in a big schmazzle. Like, they don't engage in any of that. It's
you see serious bloodlust, you know? Rory. You want Mayo to take cards, and now you want a schmazzle. And it's... Then,
look, you seem to have forgotten the Wheelos retired a good few years
ago. whoever beats them.
Kevin, you have plenty of opportunities in commentary over the years to put the building in.
I always admired your restraint, you know that.
But I know there is a bit of bloodlust there, but like whoever beats them, Mikey, is going to have to make it a war. You're going to have to make it a war. You like, if you sit back and admire these guys, they're going to beat you by 15 points.
Yeah, but if you don't have rifles and ammunition, it gets a bit tricky in the old war. Like, I find I have these five in front of me as well, Mikey, but was gas when Wheelo was talking about Fenton, and like, sure, Fenton is just, I think he's unmarkable myself, but like what, yeah. I found funny was then we moved very, very simply into the forward line.
Getting like, James McCarthy.
Correct. I was still stuck back.
There's so many.
I was still stuck back at midfield wondering, well, okay, if there was any chance that say one of our midfielders could pick up Fenton, like what's going to happen over McCarthy? Because, and I take it, Kieran, he will be his partner.
It really depends on where Brian Howard is at. Kev, you know,
in terms of selection, yeah.
Yeah. Brian carried a bit of an injury earlier on in the year, and really hasn't probably got motoring to the levels that he was at. So if he's got back into a bit of form, you know, he could be in there, Fenton and McCarthy could be in the halfbacks, you wouldn't know. But I think Desi Farrell will mix it up a bit. He has to throw something at Horan that he's not expecting. The other person that, like, you talk about Kilkenny, and I don't know who your five are, Kev, by the way, being honest with you, I've no idea. But
McCarthy, Fenton, Callaghan, Kilkenny, and Rock.
Dean Rock.
Yeah, yeah, I do include Rock. I really do. I think he's having a great year.
That's the exact point. That's the person I was going to reference. That sometimes, like Dean Rock has been, has performed consistently against Mayo.
Absolutely.
And he's one of Dublin's key forwards. He's in top form. And he's sometimes, but the focus goes on O'Callaghan and Kilkenny, and Rock is just there to drift. So, Stephen Rocher spoke about what did Dublin, caught him by surprise when in Dublin and All Ireland final. He says when Rock came out and played right half forward, you know what I mean? Because they have that ability to rotate their forward line and move it around. Like, I would think that Mayo want Chris Barrett close to goal. I would have put out they want him as the last man in defence and controlling and communicating and stuff like that. So, you know, if Rock stays in there, he's probably the ideal matchup for him. I wonder, could Oisin Mullen tackle Conor O'Callaghan? You know,
he might like, again, what you have to what you have to consider from the Mayo perspective is that Lee Keegan and Chris Barrett are kind of struggling for top form. They're I watched Chris Barrett in the Dublin Championship. We did RT did a few of the Dublin games, and I was lucky enough to get up to work on them and see Jeremy Connolly absolutely slaughtered Chris Barrett in a club championship game. Now, I don't know how wired into club championship games sometimes the county lads might be when they were looking at a big championship coming up at inter-county level, but you know, you have to assume they were giving it a big shot. And Chris was way off the pace on Jeremy Connolly.
He's looked good in the last few games, though, Kev, though.
Jenny Max, that high ball that came across there in the opening minutes against Tip. There was one apiece for Keegan and Barrett. I just thought they dealt so, like, they didn't deal with in, like, defenders that were confident about, you know, their strength or their form. In particularly, Keegan's effort to contest that high ball was weak, I think I'd have to say. But no, I think they are really fabulous players, and they have a CV that backs that up over the last few years. So it is in them. But they have to concentrate this week, this fortnight, on dragging, you know, a performance for the ages out of themselves personally. That's their personal battle, and then, you know, once they do that, the next thing the manager is dumping them in. Well, you're taking O'Callaghan, by the way, and you're taking Rock, by the way, and you're taking Kilkenny, by the way, and maybe, by the way, we're throwing you out on Fenton as well. So there's a lot of variables there. That, I suppose, that's the point I'm making. Mayo's form for their top players that would do the counter match. The only one that I'd say is the few that are in really good form would be Oisin Mullen and Paddy Durkin, Owen McLaughlin to a slightly lesser extent. I think the other defenders, you know, will have enough to be getting on with in finding their own form and performance in this final.
If we look at the other end of the field then, Ciarán, I suppose, the thing that gets raised by people like me, and it has never ever been a factor, is the lack of stature in the Dublin full back line. And we might as well ask it again now, because Aidan O'Shea has spent more than 50% of his time around the full forward line. Killian O'Connor is a big enough man, and then they've got Tommy Conroy whizzing around between the two of them. Who picks up Aidan O'Shea, and do you have any concerns if Mayo decide Route 1 football is the way to go?
Yeah, well, if to look, depending on what way Dublin start, I think I would expect I would expect Merchant to pick up Conroy, okay, straight away. I would think that's probably going to be a straightforward matchup. You would think that Aidan O'Shea is going to, and we all kind of agree, you know, that we don't know how Mayo are going to come and play. Will they go man to man? Will they drop off? Will they play? They're all the risk reward Russian roulette decisions they have to make. But you would anticipate that Aidan O'Shea is going to spend a bit of time out around the middle to support on that kick-out strategy. But he could also spend a bit of time inside. I think they have to come with something different. And that's something different like the Cavan approach, where like the balls are plucked into the sky and the quality of ball going in, and it was panic football in the second half. If Mayo get to that point, forget about it. You know, it has to come kind of early in the game where the ball has to go in quality and they have to ask questions, and you're hoping that O'Shea lands, you know, wins that first phase possession and someone coming through, and they manage to cause Dublin problems. But I would say that, you know, John Small won't he's Dublin's best man marker. And, you know, the Mayo half forwards, Dermot O'Connor, Kevin McLaughlin will kind of drop deep. You know, Ryan O'Donoghue is an industry man. You know, could Small pick up O'Shea? or would Fitzsimons switch? I would anticipate Fitzsimons would switch on to him. I would have Fitzsimons on Killian O'Connor, but if O'Shea goes in there, that Fitzsimons would switch on possibly to O'Shea, and Cooper would pick up Killian O'Connor if they're playing in there on a tight line. But if he comes out the field, it'd be interesting to see what John, like, Dublin will definitely utilise John Small in a role to counteract a key Mayo player, no doubt about it. And that could be Killian O'Connor. You know, it could be Killian O'Connor. They might say, you know, well, Killian is the guy that makes them tick. When Killian performs, Mayo perform. And they'll look to nullify a key strength. And so Small will be definitely given a role. But I definitely think Dublin have more options in terms of the matchups than Mayo do, because of the way the Dublin forward line moves and rotates. And Dublin will be a lot more comfortable, I think, in their defensive setup.
Kev, that's the thing, and you can kind of briefly surmise what the Dublin matchups of Mayo, whereas you said, you know, say it's a shopping list at the other end of the field. But I suppose he's new, he's relatively fearless, he's clearly talented and very fast. So Tommy Conroy is perhaps the Mayo forward Mayo haven't had in previous meetings with Dublin. Mm. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I would agree with that. I would agree. I would say that the Mayo full forward line, as we expect it will roll out on Saturday night, is the best full forward I Mayo have had since, like, forever, I would have said. You know, because you've two heavy scores.
Andy Moran retires, isn't it?
Yeah, isn't that gas? Yeah, isn't that gas?
Will they not miss the smarts and intelligent play of Andy Moran? You know?
Oh, they will. They will. No. Of course they will. Yeah. But Tommy Conroy is different. Andy doesn't go by players, really.
Yeah.
You know, this guy has a very explosive first, second step. And he goes by you, what I loved about, and I said this, I think on the night show, was when he did that in his very first move, I think in perhaps his first big game in Croke Park, Kieran, that he had that lovely vision to lob the pass to the back stick for Killian O'Connor to pap. Like most guys who are a bit edgy, and you were talking about it in their rookie season, that's going to be too much for them. You know, they'd punch that over the bar or whatever. But he had the smarts to spot that. And he also has he has throughout his underage career had a very keen eye for a goal, and he doesn't walk away from goal chances. But the problem I have with the high ball in, and Wheelo bet me to the punch again, is the quality of the kicker. Mm. And we don't have that natural quality. Maybe Conor Loftus would be the best we'd have at it. You know, there's a certain type of ball. So that's an issue. But the bigger issue is the pressure that the Dublin midfield, which we expect to be probably winning the greater percentage of the battles, are going to put on that in ball. That's the second thing. And then the third thing, which would be this would kill morale and momentum dramatically, is if we get, if we lose shape and those high balls are going in where it's Aidan O'Shea jumping and two Dublin fellas under Johnny Cooper's feet to sweep up the break. Like there will have to be a minimum of, you know, equal numbers, I would say, in the contest. So if O'Shea is jumping, Conroy and O'Connor have to be in the area for the second phase, because it's highly unlikely they're going to let them catch it. Well, they'll do everything in their power to stop the clean catch, because once you get clean catch, it's either a foul or a score. You will not stop O'Shea 1-1. And if they commit twos or threes, O'Shea has lovely soft hands. He will get the open man. And Conroy would be that type of player that would hang around. You know, he is foxy in around the goal. He knows how to goal hang in around the goals. So that would be very positive. But see, the problem is, and again, Mikey, you've put your thumb on it, is you can see how Dublin can match up very easily. Merchant slips onto Tommy Conroy. That's a really good matchup. He's got kind of Caffrey-esque pace. And he's done, I didn't realise this, but Sean Moran was telling me during the week that Merchant has done really good jobs. You remember this, Kieran, I'm sure. Underage for Desi on, you know, Michael Daly and an under 20.
Yeah,
he goes out after these players, and he's well used to taking on a top player in a matchup. And you would think, Jesus, his stature, he'd get caught. But if you play from in front and you have pace, you know, it'll take some pass to beat you on the back door. You know, it has to be a really good passer from outside. And so whatever way you hop that ball, Dublin just have an easier set of matchups. It just will come more naturally. And then they have the tried and trusted defensive
defensive system that they're incredibly comfortable with, that I can never fucking understand who the sweeper is for Dublin or who's the plus one. Every time I look down on the field, it seems to be a different plus one that I haven't fully figured out. And maybe that says more about me now than it does about anything else. But there you go.
There's not too many who have figured it out. Right. Well, instead of predictions here, we're going to go to you first, Rory. Can you make any case for Mayo? And when you fail to do that, can you give me the winning margin? Or if you want to go for a Mayo win, please do. But
No. I won't be going for a Mayo win at all. One point I would make, though, it could, like, I kind of have it a little bit of sympathy for Desi Farrell. I would argue, possibly, he could win the All-Ireland this year, and it will be the most unheralded All-Ireland winning manager of all time, because a lot of the, you know, look, we know what the narrative out there is already, and then there will also be thrown into the mix that, you know, it's just still Jim Gavin's team and all that type of stuff. So, you know, like, it'll take a long time to build up a credit bank as Dublin senior football manager. It's kind of a difficult job from his point of view to get. But I suppose from the predictions side of it, as I said earlier, they would need so many things to go right for them. Like, if you look back at last year's drawn final, a lot of the things that Kerry needed to happen actually happened. They had a man sent off. They got a penalty early doors. They, you know, they actually played out of their skins, and they still didn't win the game. And I would probably see Kerry as being, as much as they got knocked out early, I'd see Kerry as still a little bit ahead of Mayo. If the two were to meet, maybe, we don't know. I think, in fairness to Kevin, makes a good point that this will definitely be Mayo's biggest test, but Dublin by 10.
Oh, Wheelo, can you see anything that could sway this in Mayo's favour, or at least give them, you know, a real puncher's chance, and then your prediction?
Yeah, I think it comes back to what Kevin said. It's hope versus a team.
Hope versus reality.
Fear of losing, you know what I mean? And that's, Dublin have a fear of actually losing a game, where Mayo come in with hope. So the psychological makeup is very, very different. Having said that, where I would give Mayo credit is that they are the one team.
They'll have a go.
They are the one team that can, they prove they can get at Dublin's strengths, and particularly in that first half. And for me, it depends how much energy they invest. I really feel strongly about this. How much energy they invest in that first 35 minutes. And I know it's easy to say, oh, you have to invest energy. But, you know, 2017, you felt at halftime that Mayo had dominated. They were a point up. Last year, they were 2 points up, having dominated the first half. And you could see the energy they put into it. So Horan will be brave, but I think he's got to be brave at the right times. And it's striking that balance by managing to contain Dublin and staying in it, knowing that you can match them physically, you can push in up, and you can rattle up. And I think that's, they're all the things they'll be looking in their locker to say, we've done A, B, C, D, and F. So if they can do that, they could push Dublin right into the second half. My genuine fear is that Dublin get 4 points ahead, 5 points ahead, 6 points ahead, and then it just becomes a bit of a procession. So I just think there's too much Mayo have to do, in my opinion, and for that reason I think Dublin will win with a good few to spare.
I went to you last, Kev. Give us
there's a couple of good points there as well. The idea that nobody gives Mayo a chance is, of course, on one level correct, but another level absolutely wrong, because I can tell you 40 or 50 fellas in a bubble down around Castlebar who very much will back themselves to have a real cut. And of course, that's the way it has to be. But there are realities. I think one of those is that Mayo have to push on hard early. They can't let the game get away early. And I think one of those big things would be stopping Dublin scoring goals early on. And, you know, so there has to be some precaution taken in the first quarter until you reappraise then at the water break. I think what can't be lost, lads, in the history of finals is, you know, in general, and I'm talking on maybe 7 out of 10, 8 out of 10, finals are close-run affairs. No matter what was the lead-up to it, finals are generally close-run affairs. And from the Mayo perspective, and I'll only go from the Mayo perspective because, you know, all things being equal, Dublin are going to win this, are going to win this final. But from the Mayo perspective, they've kind of pretty much blooded about 10 players this year. So you could argue they're a young coming team. So they will need to absolutely come away from Croke Park having been competitive on Saturday night for their future. Even if defeat was to be their lot, Mayo have to have put in a performance on which they can build on in 2021. And that will be a huge motivator for the group. So that I have no sense that the game would get away from them, that it'll become a ragged last 25, 30 minutes, that type of thing. But, you know, I think one of the big, if they could keep it to a handful, I think that would be about where it's at. Dublin are just at this time, you know, a superb team in every facet of the game that we can measure. They are just at the top. So it's Dublin's definitely to lose, but I think Mayo can be ultra competitive and keep it up around maybe 5-6 points.
Okay, well, we could of course see three All Ireland football titles head to the capital this weekend. The under 20s are playing Galway ahead of the senior final on Saturday afternoon. And on Sunday, the inter-county GAA season comes to an end with the ladies' football final, which is between familiar foes Cork and Dublin. Ahead of the final, we caught up with Dublin captain, Sinead Ahern, who's actually looking to make history as the first four in a row winning captain, and Dearne O'Sullivan of Cork. Ahern speaks to us here about how Mick Bowen has changed his approach in his time as Dublin manager, and Dearne O'Sullivan talks about the physicality that Cork will have to match up against with Dublin.
Yeah, look, I suppose when he came in initially, maybe some of the things were, you know, trying to get used to what speed or you know, what sort of style of play was in women's football. So, you know, I think he brought a very attacking side of the game probably when he came in first. And, you know, as teams, you know, as we've been successful, I suppose, and teams have looked at us more and more and looked to try and break us down more and more, it's just been really tweaking, you know, what he's been doing with us. And I think, you know, we're constantly looking to evolve and develop. So I think he's done that with us. And, you know, players are very much involved in that journey, you know, very much encouraged to develop and to think about the game ourselves. So I think, you know, it's kind of evolved and grown as he's gone through his term.
I think Dublin are excellent footballers, but I think that the thing that separates them from the rest of us is their athleticism. They're extremely fast and fit all over the pitch. I think they've taken strength and conditioning to a new level. They're extremely strong. If you run into one of the Dublin girls, you know all about it. So I think like all counties, Mayo, Dublin, Donegal, Kerry, Waterford, Cork, we all have excellent footballers, but I think they've taken the pace and speed and strength of the game to a new level.
Okay, that was Dearne O'Sullivan. That's it really, Rory, isn't it? Because no more, we're talking about the men's team here. The Dublin ladies football team have become kind of quite an ominous outfit to play against, both from a skill point of view, but also that physicality which Dearne O'Sullivan talks about there.
Yeah, no, but I do give Cork a better chance this time around than they did. Like, I know, look, they played them last year in the semi-final and, like, they ran them reasonably close. They weren't good enough on the day. But, like, there was massive transition with the Cork women's team. You obviously saw the end of a team that, you know, dominated the game for so many years. And it was going to take time to sort of bed in a lot of the new players that were coming through. I know the O'Sullivan sisters are obviously driving it. Orla Finn, I think, has been a massive addition on the wing, and she's starting to kind of really get into a groove now. I think they probably needed a little bit more steel at the back. When you're losing the likes of Breed Stack and Angela Walsh and these types of players, they're very difficult to replace, especially in women's game, because, as we know, contact isn't allowed in the same way as it is in the men's. And the tackle is a lot better defined, actually, in the women's game. So defensively, they have been a little porous. But I think, look, I know we all know what happened in the Galway match. We obviously watched it afterwards. And I think they're better set this time to give Dublin a rattle. Are they going to be good enough to take them down? Probably not this time round. But I definitely think their time is coming back again. They're building a nice head of steam there. Ife, I think, is a good man to have across. have in charge. I played under Efi actually myself many years, 25 years ago, and I think their time is definitely coming. Probably not this weekend, unfortunately, but at the same time, look, I would expect it to be competitive, and I'd give them a sort of a puncher's chance.
Yeah, you'd know Mick Bowen pretty well, I would imagine, Kieran, wouldn't you? It's kind of he made the move into ladies football, and obviously it's been massively successful for him, and no more than Jim Gavin before, kind of keeping a massively successful team on the road has its own challenges, doesn't it?
Yeah, and I think in fairness to Mick, like, he worked with Jim Gavin, and when he went in there with Ken Robinson, they brought a lot of experience with them, and I think they probably tried to foster a lot of the cultures and environments that the learnings they picked up, and you know, Dublin going for four in a row. Me seeing them against Armagh, they looked kind of as strong as ever. You know, I thought Carla Rowe was particularly really good that day, and they've different key players putting their hands up. And it's just that the experience of that forward line, I think, with the likes of Niamh McAvoy and Lindsay Davey in there, that you feel they're just at a different level. And I saw Cork against Galway the day that was on, obviously, the controversial match before the Tip Mayo game, you know what I mean? And they were equally impressive, but you'd still fancy Dublin, that the power they have in that forward line, that they'd have too much.
Yeah. Kevin, the prospect.
And I think one other point, sorry, Mike, you just weren't making on it. One other point, I think it's important as well. I think one of the things that maybe the women's game has suffered from is it's gone through, like, since its inception, which is only since 1971, bear in mind, right? So it's still very young as an organization and as a sport, right? So, like, it's been dominated by one team for very long periods. So you had Waterford, you'd carry then for maybe 8 to 10 years. Monaghan dominated for a long number of years. Then the Cork team obviously winning 11 out of 13 or whatever it was. And now it looks like we're heading into a period of
dominance. You missed Mayo, like, there, I want to tell you.
And Mayo, sorry, again as well, Kevin, yeah. So I think the women's game is in a very healthy place. I just think the one thing that it's lacking is a period whereby there's two or three teams all at the same level. Yeah. And I think that would really drive it on again.
Yeah, it's heading that way, though. I think, like, I mean, Galway are tipping around the edges of it. But isn't it interesting? You mentioned Mick Bowen and Ken Robinson, Huilo. I came across Mick. He was coach of the Clare team in 2016 when we lost the round four qualifier. So they went to the All-Ireland quarterfinal that year, and Mick was their coach. And Ken Robinson was a fella I made a few efforts to try and get involved with the Rossies from the S&C perspective and just the general coaching perspective, but he's very much in demand guy. But look at the quality that they can attract, that Dublin can attract, which is, you know, great credit to them. But I suppose four in a row, isn't it? So you can see the excellence again. And the these Dublin ladies are demanding of themselves, and that their environment is top notch. And you can't but commend them. You know, you have to take your hat off to them. And this is the bit that really annoys me when this discussion comes up about Dublin, as if, you know, people are anti-Dublin. It's not. I mean, I have huge admiration for everything they're doing. I love watching Dublin play football. The ladies are top notch as well, obviously, but there is an issue. You know, if they win four, so those girls could keep going on. And, you know, I think we're all agreed that Dublin are chalking down six, aren't we? And what about the Magnificent Seven?
I can't. Yeah.
You know,
the ladies are a long way off the 10 in a row Cork, don't you?
Yeah, well, I accept that, but I mean, they're so excellent, though, Kieran. I mean, and, like, they're really pushing standards, like, their class. I mean, the levels they brought the ladies' game to. I think Dublin ladies are bringing the game to another level again. Now, Cork were magnificent, of course they were, but it's just an awful pity. Imagine if you had teams that weren't far off them in all these grades we're talking about.
Yeah,
you'd have some competition then, wouldn't you? Yeah. Well, we'll see. Look, it's not over yet. Let's see
Have Armagh running them pretty close there, and, like, you know, some wonderful footballers like Amy Mack. And I think you're right that the standard is coming up. And as a lot of the players have mentioned themselves in the run-up to this, and it's been kind of mentioned that you know, it's not lip service anymore. They're, you know, their performances are actually being critiqued, and, you know, they're being discussed on the same level as the men. So, and, you know, so it's very, you know, Galway had their reasons for not performing the last day, as are well documented, but at the same time, they weren't happy with how they played. And it wasn't a case of, well, you reached an All-Ireland semi-final. Yeah. It's gone beyond that now. And in a weird way, Wheelo, and I obviously we'd love to have fans there, but in a way, I got so tired of the fact that the attendance at the women's football final became, was almost
became
like
the story.
It was a headline. It was a headline every year what the attendance was. And you knew what the attendance was going to be. It was going to be between 40 and 60,000, and it was going up and up, and it's brilliant that it's going up. But it always seemed to me that it was a slight insult to the team that won and the team that lost that, when you read the headlines, it was almost, the attendance was always in the headline, and it was
another
in,
world record.
I think there was huge effort put in from a marketing perspective. But like, women's football in Dublin is thriving, absolutely thriving. And if I compare it to going back when I was playing as a juvenile or growing up, you know, there was limited activity or limited amount of clubs. Now every club, the numbers, the participation numbers, and listen, it comes back. I know it's an argument for another day, you know, down the route, but the level of participation and the population, significant advantage. But I would think one of the reasons Dublin, as well as getting their house in order and getting good coaches in, the women's game has grown hugely over the last 10 years, and there's massive participation levels right across all the clubs in Dublin where that was not the case 20 years ago.
I wonder, is there a correlation with the success of the men's game for the women's game? I often wonder that. If Dublin are flying, do the women then, the Dublin women also take their lead from it? I don't know.
I think there could be something in what you mentioned about the Go games recently, though, Wheelo. I think the Go games have had a huge effect because they don't differentiate between girl or boy, and the amount of participation. I mean, I run the one age group above in our club, which is in the nursery, which is the 6-year-olds. They're the Reds. They're known as the Reds, right? And we've about...
Wouldn't it?
We're a medium sized club, right? And we've 80 kids in that group and about 45 are girls, which is fantastic. Brilliant. Yeah. You know? But it's more girls than boys, and it's brilliant to see. So it'll give you an indication, like, what to go back to what Wheelo said, like when I play Gaelic football, I don't think there was even a women's section in Nemo. I don't think there was.
Yeah. So look, we'll be hoping for a close match. We'll be hoping for three close matches in the three finals this weekend, let's be fair. But
an eye out for Kieran Archer for the Dublin under 20s, Mikey.
Another
once in a generation footballer coming there.
Oh yeah, he's a serious footballer.
He's good.
He is something else. We'll hope for three close matches, but Roy, there's a good chance you'll be here next week discussing three Dublin All Ireland titles. And all the fun that'll bring. I'm glad I'm on leave. So listen, everybody, enjoy the matches wherever you watch or listen to them. Obviously, the senior men's final is on RTE2 and on RTE Radio, as are the under 20 and the women's final. And we'll have live blogs and reports on all three matches and plenty of reaction and all the rest of it on the RTE website and the RTE News app. So enjoy the weekend, everybody, and thank you to Rory.
Thanks, Mikey.
Kieran, and to Kevin, and we'll catch you. Rory, will catch you next week. I won't. See you later.
Possession crucial from this. How much longer will the referee allow? Dublin lead by a point, and there's the whistle. It's over. It's over.
We earned it by winning the last two matches on the road, and that's not going to be taken away from us.
But what I love in hurling, I love players that never give in.
He hits it. He hits it. It's over the bar. Oh, holy Moses!